This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Hey, this is Arvind Yuvraj, and you're listening to a very special Madeka edition of Enterprise.
One of the biggest issues was this. The education system we felt was just too old. It wasn't meeting the needs of the real world and the industries. So we actually went forward into the future and kind of reverse engineered the whole process.
Okay.
We went to, we looked into after the students graduate and 20 years later, what are the skills they needed? Then we went backwards. What do they need tertiary? That's when we started working at from the year 11 backwards down to year 1.
This year, we are all about a new government, new opportunities, and the ongoing effort of building the future of Malaysia. But what exactly does that mean, and where do we start? Well, the youth of Malaysia are the future of Malaysia, so education would be a good place to start. Now, trying to decide if our education system is good or bad could take all years, so for better or worse, it is what it is. It provides the access to education to the masses, to those who can afford it and to those who cannot. But because of its all-encompassing nature, by definition, the system cannot cater to the individual student. This is where third-party educators can step in. Businesses, startups, entrepreneurs, they can all play a proactive role in effectively developing the future of Malaysia by helping to educate students, young adults, and even older age brackets on a more micro level.
The thing is that this is one of the things that we realize. You have to have the heart for it. And the other thing is the determination to also do something about the education system.
This is Anne Tham, founder and CEO of Ace Adventure. Anne is also the person behind Sirius Education, the Sri Amas and Dwi Amas International Schools, and a very popular educational video game called Chem Caper. She's joined here by her sister, Melinda Lim, for an interview with Majida Hashim on the subject of unique education and the role of an education reformist.
So we went in that direction. We wanted to make sure that the kids love it. They are learning way more than they would ever learn in general, like maybe back in school and stuff like that. So then we said, look, the kids are capable of so much more, but most schools are not giving them that kind of challenge to actually raise their levels. I'm talking about not the knowledge, but skill level. You know, the fact that they can speak up, the fact that they can think. So we gave them lots of opportunities to do that, to be creative. And that's how the whole thing started. And then we realized, look, we can do this across all subjects.
And I think throughout, the focus has always been about the students. I mean, when we realize that when we can communicate and the students are getting it, that's where that's what pushed us along and kept us going.
The other thing is this, because a lot of times the learning styles is kind of focused on strong students. The rote learning style of education, it's actually only suitable for a small percentage of students. The rest of them, they don't like it, so they don't get engaged. So we decided, look, that's this whole bunch of students that we have to help make successful, right? And so we did that. We figured ways just to get them interested. So we ended up with a curriculum where we can do very creative activities in like physics and chemistry and math and ad math, econs even, history and geography. So these are very, very heavy factual based subjects. And yet we can get them to create and sing, and they go to the water theme park to do ad math experiments. So our year one, year two students, they're learning things like through Mortensen math that we use. They learn algebra, calculus, distance, area, and volume in year one, year two itself.
Okay. Wow. Okay. Were they able to handle this kind of things?
Yes, because actually, we look for similarities. What the education system has done is that they look at, oh, algebra too difficult, so you don't teach little children. But if you know multiplication table, you can teach algebra. So when the students get to that level, they already know how to do factorization, imagine, at year two. you have to understand, people talk about the 21st century skills, right? What it actually means to education is that whatever we teach is no longer just theory. You have to be able to apply. Mm. Now, the issue with education is also is application means apply in work, academic projects and coursework or whatever. But for us, the application is to apply it to the real world.
Mm.
You know, and that's how the whole we felt 21st century education was about. Now, how do you get a teacher who's trained to teach physics to actually know how to apply it in the real world? We decided, look, we wanted engineers. You know, engineers know how to apply physics into the real world, how to apply math into the real world. In fact, we had a conversation with one of the universities, you know, for education recently. They asked us, what is it the international schools are looking for, you know, so that they can produce the teachers for the schools. I said, please get me people who are trained to use the subjects for real rather than trained to teach the subject.
Mm.
Big difference.
Anne's approach to education leans towards the skills that her students can apply to their careers and just life in general once they graduate or leave school. It's a very cool concept and maybe something that even mainstream schools, government schools, can look into implementing more into the current curriculum. One of the skills that Anne highlights in this interview with Frida Liu is entrepreneurship. Malaysia is going through a startup boom as we speak. Lots of people are launching their own companies in an attempt to create their own careers instead of depending on someone else to realize it for them. And as an entrepreneur herself, Anne Tham's method of education seems to be bolstering the Malaysian startup culture while empowering students as young as 7 to learn the art of doing business.
But what we did with Dwi Emas was we have now have a platform to take it further. It is the first entrepreneurial school in the country.
Mm.
And it's not, you know, just a say sort of thing, where people may have a CCA, you know, to run enterprise or entrepreneurship. We created a curriculum together with entrepreneurs.
Right.
In order for every one of our students to be exposed to entrepreneurship and financial education.
This is from year one.
From year one. As young as like, when they join us, some of them are 5, some of them are 6 years old. So they're really cute the way they are responding to, you know, finance and stuff. Yeah. Now they're at, some of them at year two are advising their parents. Teaching has allowed me to connect with young people. And I realized that their minds are a lot more open. So, you know, if you want to make a difference or make an impact in people's lives, it helps when their minds are really open to what the possibilities are. And what I found was that too many students didn't have the skills that is really highly in demand in college, like the ability to speak up, the ability to think, and you have to write academic papers. But a lot of people think that in order to do academic writing, you have to do a lot of factual writing. But no, what I found is you really need to be able to be creative and write creatively in order to manage the factual information. So I decided actually at that moment that, look, I think we've got to start this from young, because we can't have 11 years of education and the majority of students coming out not having these skills.
Generation Z. That's everyone born after the year 1995 is slowly starting to enter the workforce. They are the teenagers, the school students, the influencers, and they're also digital natives, meaning they were born in a world that already ran on the internet, smartphones and social media. Traditional methods of teaching, like textbooks, for instance, are now in competition with handheld gadgets and 5-inch screens that these students own. And as an entrepreneur slash educator, Anne Tham's solution to this isn't to fight technology, but to embrace it. This is where ChemCaper comes in. It's a role-playing adventure-centric video game that helps players learn chemistry by solving puzzles and advancing to the next level, with each new level presenting a harder quest and even more chemistry-centric questions.
Yeah, because, you see, we have been pushing the boundaries of how education is done, right? Mm. People talk about the fact that, okay, you look at what works, you know, and then maybe think out of the box. What we did was, when we started our whole education system, we threw away the box. Mm. We didn't even have a box. We just looked at, okay, the students need this, 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 this. So how are we going to get them there?
Mm.
Okay. So for chemistry, it came about because we know that most countries are struggling with getting their young people, particularly students, to get excited about science, the sciences and the math.
Mm.
Not just our country alone. So people are talking about the STEM initiative all over the world,
yes.
You know, for science, technology, engineering and math.
Mm.
Yeah. So we decided, why not focus on subjects that around the world people are struggling with?
Yeah.
But then we chose chemistry. Then we found out we were advised to take chemistry because it's actually one of the hardest subjects to actually teach and learn, you know.
Yeah.
So we decided to take the bull by the horns and go with it. And we just kept getting feedback from people around the world that they were very excited about the game because it's the first chemistry role-playing game in the world. When you look at the textbook and then when you translate it into a game, you know, the levels will be completely different. And that's what we're trying to do here.
We're talking about the role startups, entrepreneurs, businesses and third-party educators can play in developing the future of Malaysia in this special Merdeka edition of Enterprise. Stay tuned. We'll be back in a bit with a social enterprise that's helping kids learn even if they have no access to a proper school. BFM 89.9.
Bigotry-free Malaysia. BFM 89.9.
You know, when we're young, we're right. We absorb as fast as a parched desert in a rainstorm. We want to learn. We are hungry. But at this age, we're usually marked and scrutinized for our skills in numeracy, literacy, and science, or whatever the system deems important. And don't get me wrong, they are important. Otherwise, I wouldn't be able to be speaking here today. But we fail to realize the importance of soft skills. The importance of developing these soft skills, especially at this age, because people just expect us as young adults to have these skills fresh out of high school to slap onto our resumes.
That was Ali Redha Damji speaking at TED's Youth Leadership Empowering the Future event a couple of years ago. You're listening to a special Merdeka edition of Enterprise. I'm Arvind Yuvaraj, and we are talking about building future Malaysia through education and how entrepreneurs, startups and people with a passion for education can play a proactive role in addressing the demand for alternative education and soft skills in this country.
Because we see there is a lack of this kind of confidence building and interpersonal skills, you know, that we emphasize a lot in our training for any students in Malaysia. Because we are very focused on scoring A's, producing best students from the school to parents, and you forget about their confidence, their ability to communicate. We hear a lot of issues of youth nowadays who go to university, and after that, when they go looking for jobs, the employers don't want to hire them, saying that, hey, this guy can't even solve a problem. So that is what we are teaching these kids. We're teaching them how to think.
This is Kogilavani Muniandi, Kogi for short. Together with her cousin, Narayani Balasubramaniam, they run a social enterprise called Good Kids. See, when it comes to education, it doesn't necessarily have to be academic, right? It doesn't have to be strictly school-based. There are kids who, for whatever reason, don't have access to school or have their access denied because of disciplinary issues or a complete inability to sync with the system. Some of these kids are from shelter homes. Others come from troubled families. In this interview with Jeff Sandhu, Kogi explains how her social enterprise helps these kids find their place through performance art while teaching them soft skills in the process.
Okay, the main objective is to build their self-confidence, which will, in return, keep them away from the streets, keep them away from troubles, okay? So that is the main objective. So everything that we do it revolves around this.
Okay.
So different methods for the different group of kids, different community, it all ends up to this.
All right.
So as I mentioned, we have a module for 20 weeks. So even our objectives in the module for every week is set. One is a music objective, obviously, because at the end of these 20 weeks, we want them to put up a performance. So we need to have our performing art objective.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
And another one is the confidence building. So from, you know, able to communicate with the facilitator, and then able to voice out opinion about general things, and then able to discuss things among their peers. So all this is actually stated in our module week by week.
So what type of programs do you have at the moment? Since, you know, when it started off, it was probably very different. Now it's probably slightly different. What type of programs do you have at the moment? And, you know, how do you decide, like, sort of, you know, what works and what doesn't?
Okay, our sessions are like, now we have 20 weeks program where we meet them every week. So every week we have 2 hours. The first 1.5 hour, we let them do this music. So they play the drums, they do stomping, they learn rhythm, tempo, everything. After that, the last 30 minutes, we still get them to do a little bit of acting, this role-playing that we mentioned earlier. So they're already like relaxed and had fun and all that. And now their mind is open, they're receptive to new things.
Right.
To all the information that we are going to give them about social wisers. Why you should do this, why you shouldn't do that. And they are also willing to open up and discuss things.
Mm.
So that is how our class, our sessions are structured. So you play, have fun, and then we get to the serious stuff. Actually, something that came to us by surprise is... when we started the program, they had some exams in school. And last month, they had another set of exams. Some of the students came and told us that their grades have increased. Their marks have increased.
That's great.
Yeah, this was a surprise to us. It was not one of our objectives, but like, hey, yeah, this really works.
Positive reinforcement is a pretty powerful thing. For kids that aren't doing well at school or just don't fit in, having a group of mentors tell them that they're doing well can have long-lasting effects that we sometimes tend to underestimate.
We believe that every kid is a good kid waiting for the right opportunity. So that we don't want people to be labeling, you know, oh, this kid is a naughty kid and all. So that is the main reason why we call ourselves good kids. And we want the kids also to feel that they belong to this name. We want them to say, hey, I'm part of good kids. I am a good kid. So I'm wearing this t-shirt that says, hashtag, I am a good kid. Okay, so we have given these t-shirts to all the kids and we want them to start believing this because that is the first step for them to change, you know, because they've always been told that, hey, you are incapable, you are naughty, you create chaos, all that.
Yeah, yeah.
So that is what we're trying to say, that so the public, community, teachers, parents, stop labeling.
Are you hoping that one day that you can, you know, just stop good kids? Because
yes.
Is that the plan?
Yes, right. Our ultimate goal is good kids should be redundant one day because, you know, there shouldn't be this problem anymore. As a social enterprise, you're solving a problem. So there shouldn't be this problem anymore. We would really like to see a good kids club in every school. You know, or even in communities, you know, community champions can take charge and say, okay, we have a good kids club. We are very ambitious, so we want this in every school. So those who want to come on board to help us establish all these connections, maybe how to get through this to all the schools, even community champions who want to run this, sponsors, of course, and music enthusiasts, music teachers who want to be part of our training team. We actually provide training before we send you out to train the kids. We did that this year.
Mm-hmm.
So we have a group of volunteers, but it's very small. So if we want to scale, obviously it's not enough. This effort that we are doing will not be successful if all these people that you mentioned didn't play their part.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So the schools, parents, the community themselves can play a role in this. So look at the long-term objective of how you're supposed to educate a child. It's not just about having good grades. You know, it's a lot about character building and ability for them to think and rationalize. We are moving towards an era that is very digitized, computerized. And if we don't build this thinking capacity for kids, they cannot compete with computers in future. you know, computers will take over everything. So we need to build this in them. So that is the role that everyone has to play. And we have made this platform so you guys can come in and contribute and play your part.
See, the thing about education is that it doesn't have to stop at school or at the school level, right? We should all keep learning for as long as we want to, and there's a startup that's helping people do that by connecting them to mentors. That's coming up after the break, Building Future Malaysia, BFM 89.9.
Bringing fresh meaning. BFM 89.9.
Actually, we built Future Lab because it was my pain point. So I couldn't find what I needed. I'm a biochemist. So I came back to Malaysia. I want to be a management consultant. And it's very different from what I studied. And I found it very, very hard because all of my networks were in science and biochemistry.
Brian Tan is the CEO and co-founder of Future Lab. And Future Lab is a platform that connects people, working adults basically, with mentors to help them in their careers, whatever that career may be. You're listening to a special Merdeka edition of Enterprise with me, Arvind Yuvaraj, and we are talking about building future Malaysia. One way to do that, or the best way to do that, is via education. Educate the masses and the nation will develop almost automatically, right? But governments and education systems alone aren't enough to do the trick. There needs to be more people in this equation, and that's where third-party educators come in. Businesses, entrepreneurs, social enterprises, service providers, these people play an important role in developing the people of Malaysia on a more micro level. And also, education doesn't have to stop at school. Mentorship is a form of education. Young adults who leave college and school might need guidance to realize their full potential. People who have just joined the workforce might need mentors to tell them if they are doing the right thing. And also to realize their full potential. And that's where Future Lab comes in. I sat down with Brian to talk about the current landscape here in Malaysia and how people of today can be developed for a better tomorrow.
And I did not know anyone in any, you know, businesses or any consulting firms. So I ended up in like something called Glassdoor. There was something called Glassdoor last time, and I ended up in like Lawyer Forum. So in Malaysia, a lot of us use Lawyer Forum. So if you type in careers there, it's just like loads of things. Mm-hmm. And what I realized that why it was good and bad, and it's good that to see that how everyone is helping each other. So there is that kind of social learning aspect to things. But these people, you don't know where they actually work for the company. So they might be just random, like it could be me, you just like writing things about the company. So we don't really know. So in my head, I thought it'd be sick if you could just speak to someone in the company you want to get into, and just to understand what's the application process like, the interviews, do they like it? You know, even what's their background? It'd be super interesting to find someone that was a biochemist that became a management consultant, because that would be someone that I would love to speak to, because that's who I want to become, right? So we thought that by just showing all these people that we have vetted and that can help you, there are people that you're not the only one that's going through it. There's actually other people that go through the same things as you and have ended up on the other side, and now they can help you, pull you there.
What are the young people, the millennials of Malaysia, what are we looking for in our careers? You know, what's different with us?
Yeah, I think we are a bit more spoiled. You know, we don't really look into, we don't, like our parents, you know, they need to make sure we have food on the table, make sure that, you know, we can study and everything. But I think for us, we are a bit more spoiled in the sense that we're looking for a fun place to work with your friends, and something that's more aligned to your values. You know, we haven't fought a war, thank God, but like, you know, we're looking for something that does like social good, like fits to what I believe in. I want to help society. I want to find the companies that can help me do that. Or companies can start doing these kind of initiatives within their big companies to like attract these kind of people in. And I think being able to learn, I think a lot of young youth nowadays are very keen on finding good leaders that can guide them in the early stages of their career in a fun environment. Because you're going there every day, like from like 8:30 to like 6, 7. You're in there all day, and you are, at least you can work with your friends. You're working for something you believe in, and it's fun. Yeah.
What do you think needs to change with our education system? Like how can it empower students even more?
I think they need, I mean, with any education system, it's hard to change because you need to come up with a curriculum, you got to standardize it. So we already know that this is the, you know, the kind of issues that we'll face. Even if you want to change something, it's so many processes, and it should be because it's an education system. But what we would really love to see more is bringing more people from industries, companies, working with companies a bit more to really understand, are you developing the right kind of talent? Right, so they can understand where the companies, the world is moving towards, and make sure that even though they might be a bit slower, but at least they know that they're shifting properly towards it, because industry will change very, very quickly. Right, it's like that's what they need to be, and universities and education systems need to know what is happening so that they can slowly tweak the system better to make sure that we're helping the students come out and get the jobs they want, the skill sets they need, and to do whatever they want.
We have a huge problem of talent or like skilled people leaving the country for quote unquote greener pastures, or you know, like the grass is always greener. That sort of mentality is very pervasive here in Malaysia. It's a big thing. It's so big that it has become a problem for us. That's kind of counterproductive to the country's development.
I think there are a lot more opportunities now, and I also think it's partly due to the education system where we don't give us a chance to express ourselves. We can't be individual, right? And I also feel that in our country, we had the typical jobs that we used to work for. So if you didn't fit that, you would go somewhere else, right? But now with what we see is happening in Malaysia, a lot more companies are being opened, a lot more different kind of roles, entrepreneurship and startups, different companies that could fit your values, that can actually pay you. You're working with very nice people. I think there's way more opportunities now. And I also think that people have a better chance of being individual and finding their passion in Malaysia itself. I think Malaysians are quite scared to ask questions. I mean, this is probably due to the education system where we don't really want to ask questions, just do what is told. So that is something that we realize that students need to develop. And that's the reason why we started creating all these other tools as well. Students want to read articles. They want to watch videos. They want to go for events. Not every time it's a one-on-one session, right? So that's also one of the reasons why we started building all these tools, because people learn in different ways. But on the mentor side, I think the tricky part here is that how do we let students know that it's okay to speak to them? You know, that's definitely a fear, you know, and especially when you look at the mentors we have, they're very impressive people. So when you look at a CV as a young kid, you're like, oh no, it's like, I'm going to ask this guy. He's going to think I'm stupid or something, right? So what we really try to do is make sure that everyone knows that this is a safe environment. It's like everyone, you know, there's no stupid question here. It's like they're there to answer your questions. You should, if you feel that you need to ask it, definitely ask it. Because it is your life, it is your future. So, you know, might as well get all the information you need. Because there's a lot of working professionals that are more than happy to speak to students.
Yeah.
It's just that the students are, you know, wary about them. They're scared to ask questions. But what the problem we have now is that we have so many mentors and we don't know how to utilize them. Because when you want to speak to universities, it's a new kind of service as well. They're like, hey, how come this product? You know, they have mentors, they want to speak to the universities, but they're also wary about Future Lab. They're not too sure yet, because we're also quite a young company, and now we're picking up. So now Magic is using us, Cradle is going to be using us. So we have a lot more organizations using us. But I think it's that initial fear of what is a mentor. People, just that knowledge, there's that education part of mentorship and the importance and the value. That I think is what we are working on.
Why is it important to the development of the working adults here, or the young working adults here, to have access to proper advice from, say, a mentor?
I wouldn't know how to say whether it's proper advice, but I would say like it's important for students and young people just to understand people's experiences. Because they have made mistakes, you know, they have made their learnings, and this is something that is very beneficial to you if for someone that's trying to follow in someone's footsteps or trying to make your own path. Learning from someone else and the mistakes they've made is super valuable to you, because you don't want to, they've done it, you know, they've made those mistakes. Don't go through those mistakes. So this is very valuable, especially if you're a young entrepreneur or you want to, you don't want to achieve something crazy. You want to work for, let's say, Tesla in the US. You want to, you know, you have to dream bigger. And there's people that have done it, and you can listen to them, because you might be able to do it faster than that. So instead of going through all the mistakes they've done, you can, it's a super fast lane to like to achieve what you want. Yeah. So I think it's very valuable. But I think what we realize here is that we need to help people just dream bigger, because you can definitely do it. And it really depends on the exposure, whether you've seen these kind of success stories before. Because in your head, if you've never seen anyone do it, then why do you think you can do it? So what we want to do is really help all these students see what is really possible. And you don't need to follow this typical Malaysian mold, you know, the Asian mold of a doctor, engineer, lawyer. You can be those, but you can work for more awesome companies. You can work for, like, if you're a big gaming fan, you like Final Fantasy, work for a company that built Final Fantasy. You know, you can work for, again, the Facebooks, the Googles of the world. The world is way smaller, like, you know, and I think all you need to know is maybe you need some work experience here first before you can apply overseas, but at least you know that is the steps I need to take to do what I want to do.
This has been a special Merdeka edition of Enterprise, and we've been discussing developing the future of Malaysia via education and how businesses and entrepreneurs can play a proactive role in filling the gap between the government, the education system, and the students themselves. If you like any of these interviews, just look them up on the BFM app, available for free on the Apple App Store and on Google Play. This has been Arvind Yuvaraj, Building Future Malaysia, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.